The Labyrinth of Ephib is ancient and full of 101 amazing things you can do with hidden springs, razor-sharp knives and falling rocks. There isn't just one guide through it, there are six. And each one knows his way through 1/6 of the labyrinth. Every year they have a special competition when they do a little redesigning. They vie with one another to see who can make his section even more deadly than the others to the casual wanderer. There's a panel of judges and a small prize. The furthest anyone ever got through the labyrinth without a guide was 19 paces. Well, more or less. His head rolled a further 7 paces, but that probably doesn't count. At each changeover point, there is a small chamber without any traps at all. What it does contain is a small bronze bell. These are the little waiting rooms where visitors are handed on to the next guide. And here and there, set high in the tunnel roof over the more ingenious traps, are observation windows, because guards like a good laugh as much as anybody else. All of this was totally lost on Brother, who padded amiably along the tunnels and corridors without really thinking much about it, and at last pushed open to the gate into the late evening air. It was fragrant with the scent of flowers. Moths whirred through the gloom. "What do philosophers look like?" said Brother. "When they're not having a bath, I mean."
"They do a lot of thinking," said Om. "Look for someone with a strained expression."
"Well, that might just mean constipation."
"Well, so long as they're philosophical about it."
The city of Ephib surrounded them. Dogs barked. Somewhere a cat yowled. There was that general susurration of small comfortable sounds that shows that out there a lot of people are living their lives. And then a door burst open down the street, and there was the cracking noise of a quite large wine amphora being broken over someone's head. A skinny old man in a toga picked himself up from the cobbles where he had landed and glared at the doorway.
I'm telling you, listen, a finite intellect, right, cannot, by means of comparison, reach the absolute truth of things, because by being, by nature, indivisible, truth excludes the concept of more or less, so that nothing but truth itself can be the exact measure of truth. You bastards, he said.
Someone from inside the building said,
"Oh yeah, says you."
The old man ignored Brother, but with great difficulty pulled a cobblestone loose and hefted it in his hand. Then he dived back through the doorway. There was a distant scream of rage.
"Ah, philosophy," said Om.
Brother peered cautiously round the door. Inside the room, two groups of very nearly identical men in togas were trying to hold back two of their colleagues. It is a scene repeated a million times a day in bars around the multiverse. Both would-be fighters growled and grimaced at one another and fought to escape the restraint of their friends, only, of course, they did not fight too hard, because there is nothing worse than actually succeeding in breaking free and suddenly finding yourself all alone in the middle of the ring with a madman who is about to hit you between the eyes with a rock.
"Yep," said Om, "that's philosophy right enough."
"But they're fighting."
"A full and free exchange of opinions, yes."
Now that Brother could get a clearer view, he could see that there were one or two differences between the men. One had a shorter beard and was very red in the face and was waggling a finger accusingly.
"He bloody well accused me of slander," he was shouting.
"I didn't,"
shouted the other man.
You did. Tell him what you said."
"Look, I merely suggested to indicate the nature of paradox, right, that if Zeno the Ephebian said, 'All Ephebians are liars,'"
See, he did it again."
No, listen. "Then since Zeno himself is an Ephebian, this would mean that he himself is a liar, and therefore..."
Zeno made a determined effort to break free, dragging four desperate fellow philosophers across the floor.
"I am going to lay one right on you, pal."
Brother said,
"Excuse me, please."
The philosophers froze. Then they turned to look at Brother. They relaxed by degrees. There was a chorus of embarrassed coughs.
"Are you all philosophers?"
said Brother. The one called Zeno stepped forward, adjusting the hang of his toga.
"That's right," he said. We're philosophers. We think, therefore we am."
"Ah,"
said the luckless paradox manufacturer automatically. Zeno spun round.
"I've just about had it up to here with you, Ibid," he roared.
He turned back to Brother.
"We are, therefore we am," he said confidently. "That's it."
Several of the philosophers looked at one another with interest.
"Yeah, that's actually quite interesting," one said. "The evidence of our existence is the fact of our existence,
Is that what you're saying?
Shut up, said Zeno, without looking round.
Have you been fighting? Said Brother.
The assembled philosophers assumed various expressions of shock and horror.
Fighting? Us? We're philosophers, said Ibid, shocked. My word, yes, said Zeno.
But you were, Brother began. Zeno waved a hand.
The cut and thrust of debate, he said. Thesis plus antithesis equals hysteresis, said Ibid. The stringent testing of the universe, the hammer of the intellect upon the anvil of fundamental truth.
Shut up, said Zeno.
And what can we do for you, young man?
Ask them about gods,
Om prompted. I want to find out about gods, said Brother. The philosophers looked at one another.
Gods, said Zeno.
We don't bother with gods. Relics of an outmoded belief system, gods.
There was a rumble of thunder from the clear evening sky.
Except for blind Io of the thunder god,
Zeno went on, his tone hardly changing. Lightning flashed across the sky.
And Cubal the fire god, said Zeno.
A gust of wind rattled the windows.
Flatulus, the god of winds, he's all right too, said Zeno.
An arrow materialized out of the air and hit the table by Zeno's hand.
Fedex, the messenger of the gods, one of the all-time greats, said Zeno.
A bird appeared in the doorway. At least it looked vaguely like a bird. It was about a foot high, black and white, with a bent beak and an expression that suggested that whatever it was it really dreaded ever happening to it had already happened.
What's that? Said Brother. A penguin, said the voice of Om inside his head.
Patina, the goddess of wisdom? Oh, one of the best, said Zeno.
The penguin croaked at him and waddled off into the darkness. The philosophers looked very embarrassed. Then Ibid said,
Forgul, the god of avalanches? Well,
where's the snow line?
200 miles away, said someone.
They waited. Nothing happened.
Relic of an outmoded belief system, said Zeno.
A wall of freezing white death did not appear anywhere in Ephebe.
Mere unthinking personification of a natural force, said one of the philosophers in a louder voice.
They all seemed to feel a lot better about this.
Primitive nature worship.
Wouldn't give you tuppence for him. Simple rationalization of the unknown. Huh, a clever fiction, a bogey to frighten the weak and stupid.
The words rose up in Brother. He couldn't stop himself.
Is it always this cold? He said. They seem very chilly on my way here.
The philosophers all moved away from Zeno.
Although if there's one thing you can say about Forgul, said Zeno, it's that he's a very understanding god, likes a joke as much as the next man.
He looked both ways quickly. After a while, the philosophers relaxed and seemed to completely forget about Brother. And only now did he really have time to take in the room. He'd never seen a tavern before in his life, but that was what it was. The bar ran along one side of the room. Behind it were the typical trappings of an Ephebian bar, the stacks of wine jars, racks of amphora, and the cheery pictures of Vestal virgins on cards of salted peanuts and goat jerky, pinned up in the hope that there really were people in the world who would slatheringly buy more and more packets of nuts they didn't want in order to look at a cardboard nipple.
"What's all this stuff?"
Brother whispered.
"How should I know?" said Om. "Let me out so's I can see."
Brother unfastened the box and lifted the tortoise out. One roomy eye looked around.
"Oh, typical tavern," said Om. "Good. Mine's a saucer of whatever they were drinking."
"A tavern? A place where alcohol is drunk?
I very much intend this to be the case, yes.
But the Septuke no less than 17 times adjures us most emphatically to refrain from...
"Beats the hell out of me, why?" said Om. "See that man cleaning the mugs? You say unto him, give me a..."
"But it mocks the mind of man," says the prophet Ossory. "And I'll say this one more time. I never said it. Now, talk to the man."
In fact, the man talked to Brother. He appeared magically on the other side of the bar, still wiping a mug.
"Evening, sir," he said. "What'll it be?"
"'I'd like a drink of water, please,' said Brother, very deliberately. "'Is something for the tortoise?'
"'Wine,' said the voice of Om.
"'I don't know,' said Brother. "'What do tortoises usually drink?'
"'The ones we have in here normally have a drop of milk with some bread in it,' said the barman.
"'You get a lot of tortoises,' said Brother, loudly, trying to drown out Om's outraged screams.
"'Oh, very useful philosophical animal, your average tortoise, outrunning metaphorical arrows, beating hares in races, very handy.'
"'I haven't got any money,' said Brother. The barman leaned towards him.
"'I tell you what,' he said, "'Declivities has just brought around. He won't mind.'
"'Bread and milk?'
"'Oh, thank you. Thank you very much.'
"'Oh, we get all sorts in here,' said the barman, leaning back. "'Stoics, cynics, big drinkers, the cynics, Epicureans, stochastics, Anaximandrites, epistemologists, peripatetics, synoptics, all sorts. That's what I always say. What I always say is,' he picked up another mug and started to dry it, "'it takes all sorts to make a world.'
"'Bread and milk?' shouted Om. "'You'll feel my wrath for this, right? Now, ask him about gods.'
"'Tell me,' said Brother, sipping his mug of water, "'do any of them know much about gods?'
"'Yeah, you'd want a priest for that sort of thing,' said the barman.
"'No, I mean about what gods are, how gods came to exist, that sort of thing,' said Brother, trying to get to grips with the barman's peculiar mode of conversation.
"'Gods don't like that sort of thing,' said the barman. "'We get that in here some nights when someone's had a few. "'Cosmic speculation about whether gods really exist. "'Next thing there's a bolt of lightning through the roof "'with a note wrapped round it saying, "'Yes, we do, and a pair of sandals with smoke coming out, "'that sort of thing. "'It takes all the interest out of metaphysical speculation.'
"'Not even fresh bread,' muttered Om, nose deep in his saucer.
"'No, I know gods exist, all right,' said Brother hurriedly. "'I just want to find out more about them.' The barman shrugged. "'Then I'd be obliged if you don't stand next to anything valuable,' he said. "'Still, it'll all be the same in 100 years.' He picked up another mug and started to polish it. "'Are you a philosopher?' said Brother.
"'It kind of rubs off on you after a while,' said the barman.
"'This milk's off,' said Om. "'They say if Phoebe is a democracy, this milk ought to be allowed to vote.'
"'I don't think,' said Brother carefully, "'that I'm going to find what I want here. Mr. Drinkseller?'
"'Yes.
"'What was that bird that walked in when the goddess—he tasted the unfamiliar word—of wisdom was mentioned?'
"'Oh, bit of a problem there,' said the barman. "'Bit of an embarrassment.'
"'Sorry?'
"'It was,' said the barman, "'a penguin.'
"'Is it a wise sort of bird, then?'
"'No, not a lot,' said the barman. "'Not known for its wisdom. "'Second most confused bird in the world. "'Can only fly underwater, they say.'
"'Then why did—'
"'We don't like to talk about it,' said the barman. "'It upsets people. Bloody sculptor,' he added under his breath.
"'Down the other end of the bar, the philosophers had started fighting again. "'The barman leaned forward.
"'If you haven't got any money,' he said, "'I don't think you're going to get much help. "'Talk isn't cheap around here.'
"'But they just—' Brother began.
"'There's the expenditure on soap and water for a start. "'Towels, flannels, loofahs, pumice stones, bath salts. "'It all adds up.'
"'There was a gurgling noise from the saucer. "'Om's milky head turned to Brother.
"'You've got no money at all?' he said.
"'No,' said Brother.
"'Well, we've got to have a philosopher,' said the tortoise flatly. "'I can't think, and you don't know how to. "'We've got to find someone who does it all the time.'
"'Of course you could try old Didactylos,' said the barman. "'He's about as cheap as they come.'
"'Doesn't use expensive soap,' said Brother.
"'I think it could be said without fear of contradiction,' said the barman solemnly, "'that he doesn't use any soap at all.' "'Whatsoever. In any way.'
"'Oh, well, thank you,' said Brother.
"'Ask him where this man lives,
Om commanded. "Where can I find Mr. Didactylos?" said Brother.
"In the palace courtyard next to the library. You can't miss him. Just follow your nose."
"We just came," Brother said, but his inner voice prompted him not to complete the sentence.
"We'll just be going, then."
"Don't forget your tortoise," said the barman. "There's good eating on one of them."
"May all your wine turn to water," Om shrieked.
"Will it?" said Brother, as they stepped out into the night.
"No."
"Tell me again, why exactly are we looking for a philosopher?" said Brother.
"I want to get my power back," said Om.
"But everyone believes in you."
"If they believed in me, they could talk to me. I could talk to them. I don't know what's gone wrong. No one is worshipping any other gods in Omnia, are they?"
"They wouldn't be allowed to," said Brother. "The Quisition would see to that."
"Yeah. It's hard to kneel if you have no knees."
Brother stopped in the empty street.
"I don't understand you." "You're not supposed to. The ways of gods aren't supposed to be understandable to men."
"The Quisition keeps us on the path of truth. The Quisition works for the greater glory of the church."
"And you believe that, do you?" said the tortoise.
Brother looked and found that certainty had gone missing. He opened and shut his mouth, but there were no words to be said.
"Come on," said Om, as kindly as he could manage. "Let's get back."
In the middle of the night, Om awoke. There were noises from Brother's bed. Brother was praying again. Om listened curiously. He could remember prayers. There had been a lot of them once. So many that he couldn't make out an individual prayer, even if he had felt inclined to. But that didn't matter, because what mattered was the huge, cosmic susurration of thousands of praying, believing minds. The words weren't worth listening to, anyway. Humans. They lived in a world where the grass continued to be green and the sun rose every day and flowers regularly turned into fruit. And what impressed them? Weeping statues. And wine made out of water. A mere quantum mechanistic tunnel effect that had happened anyway if you were prepared to wait zillions of years. As if the turning of sunlight into wine by means of vines and grapes and thyme and enzymes wasn't 1,000 times more impressive and happened all the time. Well, he couldn't even do the most basic of god tricks now. Thunderbolts with about the same effect as the spark off a cat's fur, and you could hardly smite anyone with one of those. He had smitten good and hard in his time. Now he could just about walk through water and feed the one. Brother's prayer was a piccolo tune in a world of silence. Om waited until the novice was quiet again, and then unfolded his legs and walked out, rocking from side to side into the dawn. The Ephebians walked through the palace courtyards, surrounding the Omnians almost, but not quite, in the manner of a prisoner's escort. Brother could see that Vorbis was boiling with fury. A small vein on the side of the Exquisitor's bald temple was throbbing. As if feeling Brother's eyes on him, Vorbis turned his head.
"You seem ill at ease this morning, Brother," he said.
"Sorry, Lord."
"You seem to be looking into every corner. What are you expecting to find?"
Just interested, Lord. Everything's new."
"All the so-called wisdom of Ephebe is not worth one line from the least paragraph in the Septuagint," said Vorbis.
"May we not study the works of the infidel in order to be more alert to the ways of heresy?" said Brother, surprised at himself.
"Ah! A persuasive argument, Brother, and one that the Inquisitors have heard many times, if a little indistinctly in many cases."
Vorbis glowered at the back of the head of Aristocrates, who was leading the party.
"It is but a small step from listening to heresy to questioning established truth, Brother. Heresy is often fascinating. Therein lies its danger."
"Yes, Lord."
"And not only do they carve forbidden statues, but they can't even do it properly."
Brother was no expert, but even he had to agree that this was true. Now the novelty of them had worn off, the statues that decorated every niche in the palace did have a certain badly made look. Brother was pretty sure he'd just passed one with two left arms. Another one had one ear larger than the other. It wasn't that someone had set out to carve ugly gods. They had clearly been meant to be quite attractive statues, but the sculptor hadn't been much good at it.
"That woman there appears to be holding a penguin," said Vorbis.
"Patina, goddess of wisdom," said Brother, automatically, and then realised he'd said it.
I heard someone mention it," he added. "Indeed. And what remarkably good hearing you must have," said Vorbis.
Aristocrates paused outside an impressive doorway and nodded at the party.
"Gentlemen," he said, "the tyrant will see you now." "You will recall everything that is said," whispered Vorbis.
Brother nodded. The doors swung open. All over the world there were rulers with titles like the Exalted, the Supreme, and Lord High something or other. Only in one small country was the ruler elected by the people, who could remove him whenever they wanted, and they called him the Tyrant. The Ephebians believed that every man should have the vote, provided that he wasn't poor, foreign, nor disqualified by reason of being mad, frivolous, or a woman. Every 5 years someone was elected to be tyrant, provided he could prove that he was honest, intelligent, sensible and trustworthy. Immediately after he was elected, of course, it was obvious to everyone that he was a criminal madman and totally out of touch with the view of the ordinary philosopher in the street looking for a towel. And then 5 years later they elected another one just like him, and really it was amazing how intelligent people kept on making the same mistakes. Candidates for the tyrantship were elected by the placing of black or white balls in various urns, thus giving rise to a well-known comment about politics. The tyrant was a fat little man with skinny legs, giving people the impression of an egg that was hatching upside down. He was sitting alone in the middle of the marble floor, in a chair surrounded by scrolls and scraps of paper. His feet didn't touch the marble, and his face was pink. Aristocrates whispered something in his ear. The tyrant looked up from his paperwork.
"Ah, the Omnian delegation," he said,
and a smile flashed across his face like something small darting across a stone.
"Do be seated, all of you."
He looked down again.
"I am Deacon Vorbis of the Citadel Quisition," said Vorbis coldly.
The tyrant looked up and gave him another lizard smile.
"Yes, I know," he said. "You torture people for a living. Please be seated, Deacon Vorbis, and your plump young friend who seems to be looking for something. And the rest of you. Some young women will be along in a moment with grapes and things. This generally happens. It's very hard to stop it, in fact."
There were benches in front of the tyrant's chair. The Omnians sat down. Vorbis remained standing. The tyrant nodded.
"As you wish," he said. "This is intolerable," snapped Vorbis. "We have been treated much better than you would have treated us," said the tyrant, mildly. "You sit or you stand, my lord, because this is a Phoebe, and indeed you may stand on your head for all I care, but don't expect me to believe that if it was I seeking peace in your citadel, I would be encouraged to do anything but grovel on what was left of my stomach. Be seated or upstanding, my lord, but be quiet. I have nearly finished."
"Finished what?" said Vorbis.
"The peace treaty," said the tyrant.
"But that is what we are here to discuss," said Vorbis.
"No," said the tyrant.
The lizard scuttled again.
"That is what you are here to sign."
Om took a deep breath and then pushed himself forward. It was quite a steep flight of steps. He felt every one as he bumped down, but at least he was upright at the bottom. He was lost, but being lost in a Phoebe was preferable to being lost in the citadel. At least there were no obvious cellars. Library, library, library. There was a library in the citadel, Brother had said. He'd described it, so Om had some idea of what he was looking for. There would be a book in it.